from under the passenger seat. The maggots hatched, as maggots do, and when a salesman unlocked the car some days later, he was engulfed by a million blue bottles. The firm had the car fumigated and swept out the insect corpses. But alas, they forgot about those in the car's heating ducts. So when a client bought the car and turned on the fan, he got a face full of dead flies. Smiling through his tears, he said, "Now we know what's meant by a fly customer." Well done indeed. Well, anyway, we've got those sort of strange tales for you, but in the program, of course, we'll only be giving you the first half, and then our wise men here will have to work out what really happened and why.
Can I just say, a similar thing happened to me when I collected a new car. It was full of food. There was cornflakes in the glove box, bacon and eggs in the door pocket, cheese in the boots. The salesman said, "What do you expect? It's a larder."
Well, I had a car, of course. I got it blessed by the parish priest. Mm-hmm. And, of course, my wife has a car. She had it blessed by the parish priest. And my Jewish friend had 4 inches sawed off the exhaust.
Right, well, we'll move on right now to Tall Tale number one. It's a story from Denmark, where a few years ago the remarkable Eila Christensen celebrated her 107th birthday with her family and friends. Amongst the many greeting cards and letters, they were surprised to find a stiff note from the local authorities demanding to know why Eila was not attending school. What was the reason for this strange missive, Bernie?
Well, I knew a girl once. She reminded me of a Scandinavian. She had a face like a Norse.
Well, I said to the wife on her birthday, "I'm getting you 2 cards. She says, "That's lovely. I want a Barclay card and an Access card." And she lost the Barclay card, and I didn't report to the police because I said whoever found it was spending less than she was.
The main thing with ladies, though, as they grow, how does a lady know if she's growing old? You know? Well, geez, your family starts taking you home early from parties. And once the lady's turned, 30, 40, 50? Once the lady's turned 60, that's it. They couldn't care less. They brag about it. They say, "Guess how old I am?"
That's right.
"I'm 74 and still at it. And I clean all my own windows." The most wonderful thing about being 100 years old is the McDonald's give you a free paper hat. We had an old lady near us, and she's 84, and she threw a wobbler the other day, and she took all the clothes off and streaked through the supermarket, and she collided with a bacon slicer. She was bound over to keep the peace. Do you know that Denmark is the only country in Scandinavia where you can stand on the beach, look out at sea, turn to your mother-in-law, and shout, "Baltic." Well, they're not the only one, but it's a good excuse.
There's an old lady of 107, and her husband died, and she was heartbroken, so she got a photograph of him, and she took it to the photographic shop, and she said, "I'd like you to alter this photograph, because he's wearing a bowler hat in the photograph, and my husband had a lovely, lovely mane of wavy hair. I wonder if he could remove the bowler hat." And they said, "Of course, we'll remove the bowler hat and we'll retouch the photograph as well. Now, which side did he part his hair on?" She said, "Well, you'll find out when you take his hat off."
Oh, lovely eye. Come on. Actually, do you know they've got stuff now called unleaded Guinness?
People don't like to admit they're old, do you?
No,
I'm sure our Tomcat's using grease in 2000.
Well, I don't mind admitting to my age, because a lot of people say, "I remember you when you'd done this or that." Actually, that's right. Well, even today, there are still people who think I'm at least 50.
Yeah. See, if you take your vest off now, we could count the rings around your trunk.
Well, let me tell you, audience, and the many listeners out there, I could have followed that with the greatest ad lib you've ever heard in your life. But not only that, it would have been the end of the BBC.
Well, there's an old fella near us. He's just joined the Darby and Joan Club. We don't know what he's doing down there, but he came back last night with 6 notches on his walking stick.
Bernie Clifton went to night school. That's why he can't read in the daylight. But what's that got to do with this dear old lady from Denmark? I think it was...
She was pondering...
It was a computer error. A computer error.
Exactly.
He's done it. What sort of computer error was it?
Well, for a school attendance and her age and all a birth certificate.
Not really. Absolutely right.
He's right.
Pardon me, Mr. Frost.
He's right.
Yes, he's right. That's right. You're right.
I'm right. Yeah.
But I...
I knew that all the time. The computer only recognized numbers 1 to 99, so when Isla reached 99, it clicked back to 0, started all over again.
Yeah.
So when Isla reached 107, the automaton
they
said
did the same with our
she
gas
was 8.
Right. Hmm? They did the same with our gas bill.
Tall tale number 2. True. A new petrol station in Yorkshire recently announced that on its opening day, petrol would be on sale at £1.50 a gallon. Several thrifty motorists queued all night outside the garage. But the last in the queue, a tourist from Scotland, got a big disappointment in the morning. What was it?
I stopped for petrol in Sheffield about a year ago, and I said, 1 gallon, please, because I'd had a bad week. It worked that club with you, Frank.
Yeah.
He said, it's the last at this price. I said, okay. I said, fill her up, put 10 in. So he put 10 in, I paid him. I said, what's the new price? He said, 10p a gallon cheaper.
Do you know that the Jews don't recognize Moses now? When he was up in the mountain, he came down from the mountain. Instead of turning left, he turned right. And the Arabs got all the petrol, and the Jews got all the sand.
Very good, huh, Frank? Do you know that, Bernie? Frank once took his car to Madame Tussauds to try and get it waxed. These days, petrol pumps are very, very shy, you know. Very shy petrol pumps. That's because they're always hiding behind stacks of coal and potatoes and stuff like that.
I've got a mate in Barnsley who's bought a new car. So what's it like? He said it's a 4 litre. 2 litres up front and 2 litres at back.
Well, it's talking about the Scots here, these 50 Scots. As a actual fact, this tourist who was from Scotland, he got a big disappointment. Well, I know a Scotsman who actually turned the gas off when he was turning the bacon over.
Do you know, Bernie, do you know, how do you spot the Irishman in a car wash?
I don't know.
He's the one on the motorbike.
I was in a petrol station last summer. I was filling the car up, and a bloke pulled in, and I noticed I was filling my car up that his rear quarter light was broken. And I mentioned it to him, I said, do you know your rear quarter light broken? He got out of his car, and he went round the back of his car, and he looked, and suddenly he burst into tears, and he got down on his hands and knees, and he was so distressed, crying his eyes out. I said, come on, heaven's sake. I said, it's only a quarter light. You're buying you one for a tenner. He said, never mind that. I said, well, be caravan. Motoring can be very disturbing. I mean, a policeman stopped me for speeding the other week, and he gave me a ticket, and I thought it'd be funny. I said, what's this, a raffle? He said, yes, keep that. 2 more of those, you get a bike.
Yes, I always remember the fellow passing the psychiatric hospital. There was a fellow looking over the wall. And a wheel came off the car. He says, well, oh, my goodness. He said, do you know where there's a garage? He said, yes. There's 1 8 mile down that way, 1 7 mile that way, 5 mile that way, and 6 mile. Oh, he says, goodness me, I'll take a walk down the 1 6 mile as near as the fellow says. The psychiatric fellow says, well, why would you do that? He says, take a nut of each wheel, put it on the fourth wheel, I mean, you go to the garage, buy 4 nuts, and put one on each wheel.
Oh, yeah.
He said, that's brilliant. He said, and you're in the psychiatric ward. He said, well, I'm in because I'm mad, not because I'm stupid.
They have all different mixtures. A lot of we should buy British cars, you know. I think British cars are best. Because these continental cars, I mean, these French cars look like sheds on wheels. I mean, even your, the Irish car, Frank.
The Irish car.
4 steering wheels, 1 for each passenger. I think this Scotsman probably stood in this queue for hours and then discovered, they told him that he didn't fill lighters.
I think they were only selling...
His car was diesel.
I think they were only selling cheap petrol to the trade. And when he stopped, the attendant said to the Scotsman, are you a mechanic? He said, no, I'm a McTavish, so we never got any.
Stop the cop!
Well, I think what has happened is the big disappointment was it was £1.50 a gallon, and the Scotsman waited for hours and hours and hours, waiting on happy hour.
Telly Savalas pulled into a garage the other day because he saw this sign outside, free air.
Was there anything to do with the fact that his car was unleaded and the petrol wasn't, or vice versa?
No, bad luck. This unfortunate motorist, queuing all night for his cut-price petrol, made the mistake of having the heater on to keep him warm. When the garage opened in the morning, the car wouldn't start because the battery was flat. He missed his place in the queue, and he had to tip two men to push it to the pumps.
Oh, just tell me, Mr. Frost, when you said the battery was flat, what shape should it have been?
There was a man that invented the electric car, wasn't it? And it was a marvellous success. He drove from London to Glasgow and used 35 pence worth of electricity, costing 4,000 quid for the cable.
I always remember that one when he said, go down to the pigeon loft. There's a very important message from brigade headquarters concerning our strategic withdrawal. Bring back the message from the pigeon. Right, sir. 20 minutes later, Murphy came in, sir. I brought back the pigeon, sir. Out the pigeon, sir. He said, all right, Murphy. What was the message?
On that happy note...
Can I just say, that was the original military coup.
On that happy note, we reach our agony aunt spot, where we deal with listeners' problems. First of all, wise men, a plea from a lady in Brighton, who writes to us, "My husband loves onions. If he had his way, we'd have them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. As it is, I try to give Frank his onions at least three times a week. The trouble is, whenever I peel or chop the wretched things, I weep uncontrollably. It's quite painful. Frank is unsympathetic. He just laughs. Is there any answer to my problem?"
Sounds like the same disaster we've got in our house. My wife bought a non-stick frying pan. She couldn't get the label off.
Yes, I remember the plumber walking. He's going into the plumber's shop, and he made a mistake, walked into the greengrocer's. And he said, "Can I have some washers, please?" But it's nice to know a plumber. Mm. You know, plumbers are marvelous because they've always plenty of connections. And he walked into the greengrocer's, and the fellow says, "Can I have some washers?" He says, "You're in the wrong shop. This is a greengrocer." He says, "Okay, give me a handful of leeks."
Of course, the answer is, the household hint here is that this, with onions, is all to stop them, the aroma, is to peel them underwater, isn't it?
That's true.
The only problem is it's a bit inconvenient having to go to the local box and with scuba gear.
Scuba gear, yeah. Well, I think marriage is a wonderful institution. You know, who the hell wants to live in an institution?
Well, there's
only one thing wrong with marriage.
That's why they put onions in wedding cakes, you know.
Why?
Because they're always in tears.
Boy, am I going to regret answering that?
I know that Frank, you are very, very romantic.
Yes, I am.
And last night he gave his wife a candlelit dinner. Oh, because they'd cut his electricity off.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I make love to my wife now, she jumps out of bed and does a lap of honor. The only thing I find wrong with marriage is the hours are too long.
This man adored onions, but now, let's see. You know, Bernie Clifton's favourite TV dinner is MASH every Wednesday.
I don't mind saying on radio here, and I don't give a damn if my wife is listening, I married the wrong woman. I should have married a woman who was too proud, a rich woman who was too proud to let her husband work. And I give fact, I should have married the perfect woman who is an infomaniac that has a golf course near a brewery.
You said your wife, you told us your wife's a terrible cook.
She is a terrible cook. You won't believe it.
Your gravy boat has Titanic written on the side.
Have you ever heard of anyone burning a tin opener?
I remember that I've been married 27 years. I'm on my fourth mirror. And I remember the wedding. A mother wanted a society wedding, so we got married at the Co-op.
So what is the advice, then? About the onions. Peel them underwater seems to be the only clear advice we've got.
Peel them underwater and give the man his onions when he wants them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's the wrong advice. I think what she should do is she should get rid of Frank, because if he is so inconsiderate, then I would think he's not the proper husband. So get divorced and let me know where you live and I'll burn it out.
Well, I think, anyway, too many vegetables can be very dangerous.
Well,
can be very bad for your health.
Is that the quotation?
No, I think it's... No, it can be bad for your health. I mean, too much vitamin E can kill you. I mean, vitamin E killed my uncle. A bag of broccoli fell on his head.
A man is entitled, if he likes onions, let him, as a man grows older, he's entitled to be cosseted. And a lot of men, as they grow older...
Cosseted.
Well, yes, well then. They go in for pickling. In fact, the older a man gets, the more pickling he seems to do.
Well, finally, in this section of the...
My favourite food's jelly. Every time I see a big wobbly jelly, I get a sudden urge to put on a Dolly Parton record.
Well, before you do that, an appeal from a South London girl who writes, "My boyfriend and I worry about how our families will get on when we're married, as I am working class and he is upper class. We've tried to adapt. When I go to his lot, I put on a posh voice and stick my little finger out. When he comes to us, he talks rough and leaves a ring around the bath. But what happens when the families meet at the wedding?"
Well, the thing is here, never to have any secrets. I mean, there was a couple that they were, all through their engagement, they kept two terrible secrets from each other. Her secret was that she had terrible halitosis, terrible bad breath, and his secret was he got terrible, smetty, swelly feet. Or even sweaty, smelly feet. And there he was with these smetty, swelly feet. And until, of course, the final denouement came on the night of the honeymoon, on the first night, where she went to bed first, and he went to the bathroom, and he tried to clean his feet, and she came back, and she was eating mints, and he jumped into bed with her, and she said, "This is it." She said, "I've got a terrible secret." He said, "I know, you bet me socks." This moral is no secret.
Yeah, well, my wife was a society girl, quite honestly. She was very upper class, and I came from a very poor family in Belfast. We actually, when the bin men came in, we used to have to borrow two buckets of rubbish. But my wife was, she was very upper class. And in fact, when I got married, I wasn't even in the photographs. And my mother-in-law didn't want me to marry her, because what was very embarrassing was she arrived in a hearse and wearing a veil.
I think this...
And I remember my mother sitting down at the back of the taxi. And don't know the way the shoes tied on. She was trying them on. And we got married in the backyard so the chickens could get the benefit of the rice.
But listen, things have changed for Frank because he lives in a beautiful house now. I went round to see him the other day and they've got concealed lighting. He wallpapered over the switch.
This girl should show a bit of class when she visits. Let his family drink out of the bottle first. I remember a girl taking me round to meet her family once. Mind you, I don't think her husband and six kids were too pleased about it. There's always trouble at most weddings. And why? You're always expecting a punch-up. As soon as you go to the church, the usher always says, "Whose side are you on?"
What about him saying to me, "Do you take this woman for your lawful wedded wife?" I said, "But you?" He said, "No." I said, "What the hell are you popping on to me?"
There are all sorts of unusual people get married now, jumping on of aeroplanes, underwater.
Yeah.
There's nudist weddings.
Getting married. What about getting married on a fridge?
Let me tell you about them.
What? Oh, boy.
If you had
the end of that one.
Yeah. If you had a nudist wedding in a fridge, you'd never be able to tell who the best man was.
Well, I wouldn't mind a nudist wedding, because you don't have to pack anything.
I went to a wedding once, and the bride's mother had a terrible long nose. Every time she nodded at the vicar, she cut the cake.
So you're basically, your advice to our South London girl, Bernie's advice, is
no secrets.
No secrets.
Yep.
Is that the advice, friends?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, very wise. Very wise.
I would think so.
An act of fact, do you know I got married with a Salvation Army band? And it was really an upper class band. I mean, you would realize this before. An act of fact, the Salvation Army band had a string section.
I think you have to, when anything like, when that's a sermon like that, all has to be behind you. All complaints, troubles, people with amnesia should forget all about it.
And my brother-in-law said, Salvation Army chap said, what hymn would you like? And my brother-in-law said, him playing the big drum.
This lady in America.
Said, would you like a war cry? And he went, yeah!
This couple in America got married for about the fifth time. You know, about the fifth time, and she must have had a craving for wedding cake. Anyway, he says, honey, he said, I've got a confession to make. He said, I'm a golfaholic. All the time I'm playing golf all day long. She said, I've got a confession as well. He said, what's that? She said, I'm a hooker. What shall I do about it? He said, well, if you get a better grip, he said, fine.
Right, well then, back with that magnificent advice to our tall tales with a theatrical mystery, folks. The 19th century actor-manager, Sir George Reynolds, took his company all over England, Wales and Scotland, delighting the locals in plays ranging from Shakespeare to Murder in the Red Barn. But he refused all invitations to take his company to Ireland. Why was this, Frank?
Well, I think it's a very obvious answer here. I remember reading about this Sir George Reynolds when he was in that famous pantomime, Aladdin and His Wonderful Lamp, and he got the sack. He was playing the witch. And he was well-oiled every night. I think the answer is in the very last phrase, Mr. Frost, because it said he refused all invitations to take his company to Ireland. You know the answer? They couldn't get standby flights.
I think he refused to go to Ireland. Sir George Reynolds refused to go to Ireland because Frank Carson wouldn't give him elocution lessons.
I think in a previous experience he had a disaster in Dublin. He organised a gay 90s ball and all the men were gay and all the women were 90.
Well, you'd know a lot about that, Bernie. I mean, the acting bit. I mean, I'm talking about you because you are a well-known thespian. And you're
right,
yeah,
absolutely.
He was in the film Chariots of Fire. He played a wingnut. And in Streetcar Named Desire, were you the conductor in that or a tram ticket?
I remember him in that also, yeah.
A couple of years ago, he had a small part in Lace, but his wife caught him in the bedroom and made him take him off. Somebody told this actor-manager, Sir George Reynolds, that in Ireland you get leprechauns. And he didn't fancy it because he already had bunions.
I think on a previous visit to Ireland, it was in his one-man show. All through the play, the audience was shouting, O'Shawley Hooley Juice! O'Shawley Hooley Juice! And as Frank would know, this Reynolds thought that it was Gaelic for encore and more. So he carried on, and right through the performance, they were all shouting, O'Shawley Hooley Juice! O'Shawley Hooley Juice! And anyway, he was very pleased about this because he thought it was encore. And on the way home, the theatre manager says, be careful as you go across that field, there's been some cattle in it today. Don't mind you don't tread into the O'Shawley Hooley Juice.
Yes, well, the Red Barn was very, very famous. I think a lot of the audience will remember the story when they came into the room where the murder actually was committed, and they pulled down the fireplace, and there was a man standing there with a card around his chest, and it said, Irish Hide and Seek Champion.
Perhaps he wouldn't go to Ireland because he owed money to Terry Wogan.
Well, Wogan's not using makeup now, he's using ready mix. And I wonder if that is really a wig he's wearing. What would you think?
Well, you can do a lot now on those the ready-cut looms.
Yes, indeed, because I remember it actually is a wig. I can tell people here because I remember going in and saying, give me a wig, and the fellow said, well, is it with tax? He said, well, no, just give it the stuff you stick it on with.
What's the explanation, Ken?
He hadn't played his digs.
Well, this is the explanation. He did have a guilty secret. It wasn't, in fact, that he hadn't paid his digs, but Sir George Reynolds refused to go to Ireland for fear of recognition. Sir George, whose great image was that of an English aristocrat, had actually been born Daniel Flynn in the back streets of Dublin. He feared that a trip to his homeland would give the game away, and he also had two illegitimate children over there as well. Okay. So George was hiding. It wasn't the bill for the digs, but that was the reason for Sir George.
Dreadful.
Well, Mr. Bill Rickards is the subject of this from Bath. He recently parted with a heavy doorstop which had served him well for 40 years. Why did the doorstop have to go?
Well, when a wife's been treated like a doorstop...
We were clearing a loft out a few years ago, and we found an old boomerang. We threw it out 47 times, remember?
Yeah, 40. Was it a black pudding? Because they do go off after about 40 years.
My neighbour took me down his cellar, and he said, look at that. He said, that wardrobe, he said, it goes back to Louis the 14th. I said, well, our television goes back to Curry's on the 15th.
I remember going to an old Stanley home, and the fella, and I looked, there was all these marks in the bed. I said, shooter bed? He said, no, woodworm.
Frank, I believe you won the brain of Britain. You're going to keep it in a jar of the mantelpiece.
It's probably an antique doorstop. Somebody told him that this, whatever he was using for a doorstop, was worth a fabulous amount of money. So he sold the money and bought himself a
Skoda. Well, why did the doorstop have to go?
Not
I think that's the main point.
It did have to go.
I believe that the doorstop had to go because he discovered, or somebody more knowledgeable than himself discovered, that it actually was an unexploded shell.
Exactly right.
Good heavens.
That is brilliant. It was an unexploded shell, and a bomb disposal squad was called in to deal with it. Luckily, Mr. Rickard's family were not the kind who slammed doors over the previous 40 years.
Boomerang.
If you have any tall tales to amaze us with or personal problems you'd like discreetly aired, we'd love to hear from you. Just for now, this is David Frost saluting the team, saying thank you for joining us on behalf of Ken Dodd, Bernie Clifton, and Frank Carson. Andrew Palmer and Nell Brennan, who devised and researched, and our producer, Edward Taylor. We hope you'll be with us again next time. It's time to pull the other one.